The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Wynns Coonawarra Estate has featured fairly prominently on this podcast. We've met Chief Winemaker Sue Hodder, as well as viticulturist Alan Jenkins, who's since departed the business. You've also heard about Wynns from Andrew Kayard, MW, back in Season 7, and Matthew Jukes in his masterclass on Cabernet Shiraz blends. This time, though, we're not talking about Wynns Cabernet or Shiraz, at least not as you know it. Wynns senior winemaker Sarah Pigeon is with us this episode to talk about Wynns Reframed, a completely new range of wines that are picked earlier with little or no oak influence to maintain freshness and aromatics. It seems like a major departure from Wynns' core business. So in this special podcast episode, produced with Wynns' support, I started by asking Sarah about the origins of the Wynns Reframed concept.
Well, look, it is very new. I guess we've been playing around with this idea for just two vintages now. So 2021 and 2020, we started doing some experimental wines, and then 2021 was when we felt comfortable and that we'd hit on some good styles and that it was time to go ahead. And so these are the wines that we're going to discuss today from 2021.
And who was it sort of driven by, the decision to do this? Was it something that kind of came out of head office, or was it just, or was it more a winemaker-driven project of let's have some fun?
Collaborative. And so definitely the winemaking ideas and the varieties that we have come up with, that's all come from Sue and myself. These are ideas that we came up with, and it was really fun to do so and just be very creative and come up with wacky things. But we were asked to do that and encouraged to be as crazy as we could be in collaboration with our lovely marketers who just wanted, they identified it, that we really needed to have something that was speaking to a new audience. And so they asked us for ideas, and there's nothing more fun than that when you do get that opportunity to be really creative and go crazy. Not everything worked. We tried some other things as well, but these are the four that we're really happy with that we're going forward with.
We often hear with some of these brands like such as Wynns, which are such great old brands, that the consumers aren't getting any younger, and you've kind of got to keep finding ways to reinvent yourselves to make sure Wynns is relevant to younger drinkers as well.
It's true. And so, of course, I think that's something that a lot of wineries would be thinking about, how to recruit younger and new people to especially a heritage label like Wynns. That's something that we do often think about. We have found, as we try to come up with new projects and ideas to attract new people, that often our very loyal followers love these ideas too, though. So it's not to say that this is not going to appeal to our current loyal people either. The idea with Reframed was to be quite polarizing. We don't mind if these wines are not for everyone, because we really did want to grab attention with what we're doing and show something very different in the styles and what Coonawarra in particular can achieve. So they're meant to not be for everyone, but they're pretty lovely wines. So in fact, we have not found too much resistance to these new styles, and they are very different to what we do classically with Wynns.
And you've still managed to keep the iconic gables as part of the branding, albeit with some really eye-catching colours.
Yes, that's seen as very important. Of course, that label, the iconic woodcut label that was created in the 1950s, is so recognisable as a part of Wynns, so it was important that that be part of the labels going forward. But I love the way that they've respectfully kept that woodcut image but made it very bright. And it's not the first time that we've had colour on the Wynns labels either, but it has been a few decades since we had some colour. The 60s and 70s, they certainly had some colourful labels still with that woodcut image at that time. So it's a bit of a return to that idea, but in a really artistic and eye-catching way that I quite love. They're very, very different.
Speaking about the wines as a set, what was sort of the overall winemaking methodology that you were following? I think you talk about, you know, less oak, earlier picking, those types of things.
Yes, there are a few things that really came to encompass what we wanted to do with these wines was capture freshness, capture early drinking. And that's, of course, easier to do in the white and the rosé that we've done. But to follow that through into the reds was more of a challenge and more of a departure for Wins in terms of our style, to really keep them with no oak and as light as we could make these varieties and really designed for early release, early drinking. That was something that took a couple of years for us to get right.
So tell me, you know, what were some of the tricks that you used to be able to do that?
Well, to start with, the Shiraz Riesling is a good example of how we started this. And so we started with an idea that was based in some tradition for Wins. So the rogue vines that we name it on the label is actually part of our history. There was Riesling interplanted in amongst some of our early Shiraz vineyards. And so sometimes we would notice in the crusher that them, just because there were a few misplants of Riesling mixed in with the Shiraz, you'd see a flash of green coming through the crusher. And you'd think, oh, whoops, there's a little bit of Riesling in there. But it was always there, and I think it's part of the Coonawarra style and the Wynn style. It highlights the florals and the spiciness that I like to see in our cool climate Shiraz that we're trying to make here. It just elevates that a little bit. So it's historic, and of course we've cleaned up our vineyards and got rid of the misplantings as we go with good viticulture, but we decided to purposefully put a little bit, just a couple of percent of Riesling back in with these parcels, and to recreate that style. So that had a historic reason, but also it's based on a technique that is widely used in France and in Rhone. Of course, Shiraz, a little bit of Viognier you're in with Shiraz is not invented by us. That's a common technique there for a similar reason, to elevate texture and perfume in those wines as well, and used a very good effect in around Australia as well. Shiraz Viognier blends can be quite famous from the Canberra region, some real iconic wines out of there. Now we've done it in a less serious, more playful way here with our Rogue Vines version, but it's a genuine part of our story, and Riesling is the part that is different for us compared to Viognier. We don't have Viognier here in Coonawarra, but Riesling we do, and we think it's a valid different style and an interesting story. So adding the Riesling is part of it, also pressing it early to keep it super soft. This is a very light, juicy wine, quite different in its weight to a normal Wins Shiraz, so very much designed for this early release.
Well, we may as well move on to the other red, the Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon blend. We don't see too much Cabernet Franc in this country. Tell us about Cabernet Franc at Wins.
Well, as a variety, Cabernet Franc does not have the generosity and weight of Cabernet Sauvignon. There are some similarities in some of the flavours, but Cabernet Franc is much more perfumed, aromatic, quite a leafy variety, and much lighter structured. Historically, Cabernet Sauvignon has been so famous because it's got that generosity and depth in the palate that is so popular and much more accepted in the world. So Cabernet Franc by itself, they can be quite light styles. And I think that's something that people are only just starting to explore and accept for straight Cabernet Francs. Sometimes they can be too light, and that's why we have chosen here to play to our strengths a little bit and add a bit of Cabernet Sauvignon in with the Cabernet Franc. We've done that as a co-ferment, crushed them together and fermented them together, so mirrored the idea that we had with the Shiraz Riesling to ferment them in one go to strengthen the style, just add a little bit more depth, which we think makes it a beautiful, palatable drink. We've still got all the aromatics and Cabernet Franc definitely leading the style, but yes, a little bit of Coonawarra Cabernet makes everything delicious.
And that co-fermenting technique, I think, being something you use elsewhere in the portfolio, I seem to recall discussion of your Cabernet Shiraz blend being co-fermented.
That's right. So it's something that we've become quite comfortable with here at Wynns. We have been doing that for a number of years. The V&A Lane wines, so they're some of our top wines. So at a more serious, expensive level, we've been doing that for over a decade for that label, V&A Lane, fermenting Cabernet and Shiraz together, two varieties that are not normally considered to ripen in the same time. They're often picked a month apart. So for V&A Lane, the challenge was to hunt out the earliest ripening bits of Cabernet from the V&A Lane vineyard, which is all one little nice early ripening microclimate. So that was a big challenge when we first started doing that, and we've done it very successfully. Beautiful wines at a lovely high quality level there. So having got that right, to do it with Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon, which ripen quite a lot more closely together, was fairly easy for us, and we had some confidence in getting that one right.
And what do you think would be the difference if you were to compare this wine having been co-fermented, or compare what it would look like if you fermented them separately and then blended them after the fact? Have you been able to make those comparisons to see what difference it makes?
Yes. So with a lot of our blends that we're doing together, of course, we have similarly fermented these varieties separately in the past. So we've got experience and we know what these varieties look like separately. And it's very valid to do blending that way, ferment them separately, blend them together later. We do a lot of that for Wynns as well, for different parts of our winemaking process. And that's another lovely way to make wines. But by making the decisions very early, getting the ripening to line up and really fine-tuning those calls early on, I think you get a seamlessness and a joyfulness through the wines that they settle in so early by being blended together and making those decisions. It takes some confidence and you can make mistakes. But I think we've got experience with it. So we think it's a really nice difference to build into these wines in particular.
Moving on to the rosé, Coonawarra Cabernet might not be the first fruit source people think of when it comes to making a rosé wine. What does that bring to the table when you're trying to make a rosé?
So again, when we were talking about taking classic varieties that Wynns is known for, Cabernet and Shiraz, and reframing them as we've named these wines, thinking about Cabernet Sauvignon and how different we could make that from what we're known for our Coonawarra Cabernet Sauvignon, the most different thing we could think of was a rosé. So that was the challenge and why we decided to make the rosé from Cabernet Sauvignon. Now, it is a challenge. I think naturally a Cabernet rosé has quite a round, juicy fruit, ball of fruit within it that is all right. But what we really wanted to make sure that we focused on with the rosé for Wynns was we wanted it to be super pale, super dry, lovely, crisp, and it be more of a long, savoury palate. So we were fighting a little bit against the juice ball that Cabernet Sauvignon would tend to throw you, but I think that we've managed to do that through being careful with our harvesting decisions, nice early harvests to make sure that we keep it pale in its colour there, and that also helps with the structure of the palate in the long term that we came up with for this wine.
And then quite an unusual blend that you've got there for the white wine of the four, Fiano, Pinot Grigio, Arnis. How did you arrive at those varieties? And is that kind of something that's going to be set in stone in the future, or will we see that get tweaked and, you know, each vintage might be different?
Well, I quite like those three together, so we're happy with it. I think we're going to repeat that at least one more time. We have made all these four wines again for 2022 and we're pretty happy with the results. So we've repeated that combination and the order of combination there for the Fiano blend this year. And the reason for it, well, they're Italian varieties, so we were keen to do that. We were keen to lead with Fiano because it's just really a variety that's capturing people's imagination these days. I have made all three of those varieties separately, so I knew the qualities and the strengths and weaknesses of the three, and I know that Fiano can have this beautiful freshness, but the acidity can be a real challenge to rein in. And then for Anise and Pinot Grigio, they can almost have the opposite problem of being quite low in acidity and having almost a bit of a soapy palate, but they've got more depth and more savoury notes. So we thought that the two together were actually ideal for, again, this idea of blending them early. So we did this as a rolling ferment. They were picked separately when they were ready, but then we just added to the juice as each variety came in and fermented them together. And we're very happy with how that played out with the palate in particular to even out the acidity of the Fiano and build in more depth and savoury notes.
And it's labelled as Limestone Coast. It's the only one of the four that's not a Coonawarra wine. Is this the first time that Wins would have gone outside Coonawarra for any of its wines?
It's not the first time, but it's the first time in quite a long while. There was certainly a history in the 60s and 70s when Wins was associated with wines from many regions around the country and was considered a very experimental wine brand at that time. But really, for the last four decades, it's very much focused on Coonawarra. So this is stepping very much into a retro phase going outside of the region, but not too far. The Limestone Coast just surrounding us, beautiful, pristine area. And so these unusual varieties, we really did have to hunt around the Limestone Coast and just find little pockets where people have been brave enough to break away from the classics and plant these different varietals. We're hoping that we can plant some Fiano in the next year or two here in Coonawarra and progress and make that possible to come from Coonawarra as well. But for now, beautiful grapes that we've partnered with from around the Limestone Coast.
And for the uninitiated, Coonawarra is part of, you know, it's like a sub-region, it's its own GI, geographical indicator within Limestone Coast. Is that right?
Yes, so Limestone Coast is, officially it's a zone rather than a region, and it encompasses quite a few other regions with Coonawarra at its heart. So it goes as far north as Bordertown and Pathway to the north of us, Rattenbully also to the north, and then Coonawarra in the middle here, really the region that's the most known internationally. But with these other regions like Pathway have been established for nearly as long. Then over to the coast, you've got Robe and Mount Benson, beautiful coastal regions. And then down to the south to Mount Gambier, based on the side of a volcano, its own lovely, cool climate story to tell there as well. So there's lots of interesting little pockets and regions dotted and surrounding Coonawarra.
How have you enjoyed this departure from Wynn's core business, playing with some of these unusual varieties and very different wine styles?
Well, yes, it has been a joy to make these wines. And of course, the classic Coonawarra wines that we make are very dear to our heart. We feel confident that we're not compromising on the classic Wynn's wines. We love those styles. They're important part of lots of people's cellars and important for us to get right. But it's also important for Wynn's to progress and to not stand still and to grab attention from people and keep people engaged with Wynn's is very much something that we enjoy doing.
And you don't think that you're really taking a risk by doing this, that you don't run the risk of confusing people as to what Wynn's stands for?
I think that there's, as I said, room to get people's attention back on the brand with these new wines. We don't expect everyone to like these wines. So yes, there's some risk. We feel like we need to take those risks in order to keep people interested in what we're doing. Some people will hate these labels. Some people won't enjoy the wine styles, and that's okay. We want them to be polarizing and to create discussion. If that just means that people decide they prefer our classic wines, that's okay. But we've got these new offerings as well. And as I mentioned a little earlier, actually, a lot of our loyal drinkers love it when we push the boundaries. And we've found that with these wines, there's a few people that we always test out our little projects on and think, well, they're not going to like that. And you know what? They still do. It won't be for everyone, but it is fun for us to see that some real stalwarts can still enjoy these new styles.
And is the lineup of the reframed range, is it sort of locked down now, or will there potentially be new wines or different blends in the future?
There could be different blends, and I view this as a test somewhat, and here we are, there's four of them. They might not all be successful. We're really, these are very, very new releases. We've had them in our cellar door for a few months and had beautiful response to it. So we're confident that as we roll these out around the country, that we should get good response to most of them. They are lovely wines. We're confident in them. But some will resonate more than others. Maybe we won't make all four in the future, or maybe we'll switch to something else. But it's good to test things out and have some wines that don't have that weight of responsibility to continue them on as we do for a lot of the other Wins wines.
Now, while I've got you there, Sarah, what was the verdict on vintage 2022? And I must say there's a bit of self-interest in this question because I had a baby a couple of months ago, so I'm going to be looking for some good 2022s to put in my cellar.
Well, congratulations. And I can say that 2022 Cabernet Sauvignon from here at Wins is some of the best that I've seen in quite a while. Absolutely impressive, beautiful wines. And, you know, we had a wonderful season in 2021. I didn't think I could see better Cabernet than I had in 2021, but these ones, you know, it's early days, but they are lovely, really delicious. So I feel confident that we'll be able to find something for you, James.
Music to my ears. I'll be looking for some Magnums if they're available.
Yes, yeah, they should be.
Good stuff. And what else is happening at the moment? Obviously, Alan, the veteran viticulturist, departed fairly recently. So
yes, Alan, we had a lovely farewell for him in November last year. After 2 decades working with Alan, it was quite a big farewell and a big moment for Sue and I to say goodbye to him and all the wonderful work that he has done in setting up great vineyards for us to work with here in Coonawarra. But he's left us with a wonderful team led by Ben Harris, who has replaced Alan as the Wins viticulturist, and he's doing a terrific job. And of course, he's been working with Alan alongside Alan for a long time. So we're in good hands there. Ben's a great viticulturist. He loves wine. He's off to the Len Evans tutorial later this year. So he's busy tasting and practicing and making sure that he enjoys that experience. It's wonderful to have such a wine lover in our viticulture team.
Well, it's quite unusual for a viticulturist to go to the Len Evans tutorial, isn't it?
Yes, I think he can be proud of that. Certainly there have been viticulturists in the past, but we're really pleased to see Ben, and we know he really loves his wine, and we're confident that he'll do well in that tutorial.
And what else is coming up this year as we start to think about, I don't know whether Wednesday is going to be a feature in 2022, but what's happening with some releases later in the year?
Yes, well, a couple of things that Sue and I are looking forward to. One for myself is the return of the Coonawarra Vignerons Roadshows or Cellar Door in the City events. It's been a couple of years since we've been able to hold those. And so in August, I'll be able to be in Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney, presenting the new Wins wines direct to consumers at those events. That's always fabulous. And we try to make sure that we build in a few dinners or other tastings and opportunities while we're in those cities. And then, of course, new to Wins as well as Ben Harris, we have Chris Plummer, who's just joined the Wins winemaking team, and he'll be presenting at the Adelaide version of this roadshow. And he's another great wine lover with a wine retail background as well as his degree in winemaking. And so we're looking forward, Chris and I, to presenting to consumers. And then another thing that's very important for Wins is the launch of John Riddick internationally on the Place de Bordeaux. Now, Sue Hodder has been working on that for quite a few years now, but it's really only right at the end of 2019 that she got to have the official launch of John Riddick in Europe with the Place de Bordeaux system, in conjunction with a beautiful book about John Riddick, the history of the man and the wine, written by Andrew Kayard. And that really got interrupted somewhat with COVID, and she's very much looking forward to getting back to Europe to communicate this important wine internationally to a new audience.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to trying the new vintage John Riddick later in the year. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on to have a chat about the new wines.
My pleasure. Thank you, James.
Wins Reframed wines are now available nationally from select fine wine retailers. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.